Welcome to the Femme Health Podcast, where we focus on providing clarity and evidence-based facts in female health and wellness. The internet, or as us physicians like to say, Dr. Google, can be overwhelming for patients seeking reliable information. And unfortunately, not all of that information is backed by research, science, and real doctors. Here, we pride ourselves on demystifying medicine for you and giving you access to some of the most talented medical doctors or experts in their field. I'm your host, Dr. Sayana Gori, and I interview doctors so you can have an inside look at what I would ask my colleagues if I had a medical question. Let's get started with today's episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Femme Health Podcast. Today, we're talking about birth control options with Dr. Natasha Sriraman. Dr. Sriraman has both an MD as well as an MPH, which is a master's in public health. She's a fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics and a fellow of the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine. Dr. Natasha is an associate professor of pediatrics at Children's Hospital of the King's Daughters Eastern Virginia Medical School. She's a researcher as well as a mother of three. She has spoken nationally on breastfeeding and postpartum depression and published extensively on these topics. She sits on the board of directors of the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine and is the chair of the Education Committee. She has previously served as education chair for the American Academy of Pediatrics in their section on breastfeeding and the board of directors of Postpartum Support Virginia. She advocates regionally and nationally for postpartum depression screening within the pediatric setting. She is currently the American Academy of Pediatrics District 4 Diversity and Inclusion Champion and is the co-chair of membership for the AAP Council on Community Pediatrics. Woo, that is a long list of accomplishments. So welcome to the show, Dr. Natasha.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be part of your project, and I think it's going to be a wonderful source of information. So thank you for having me this morning.
Of course, yeah, we are really excited to talk about this topic. I need a refresher on birth control too. So today we're going to focus on the different types of birth control options that women have. And we all know that abstinence works 100% of the time, but okay, let's get real. We all know that actually practicing abstinence works like never. So it's really important that we educate young women on their birth control options and also remind adult women about the different options that they have. So Natasha, I wanted to start by talking about teenage pregnancy and some of the associated comorbidities. So can you just expand a little bit on that?
Yeah, sure. So as a pediatrician, unfortunately, I do see teen pregnancy almost daily. And the unfortunate part is that many of these girls were just never, you know, educated, definitely not through the school system, but whether through family members, mothers, other female members in their family about, you know, safe sex and options and things like that. So in some states, we are seeing decreases, but pretty significant, especially in the United States. Each year, it's estimated that over 750,000 adolescent girls become pregnant, and over 80% of these are unplanned. Many of these pregnancies, over 60%, end in births. Some of them end up in miscarriages. Almost 30% will have an abortion. By 20 years of age, 18% of these young women will have given birth, and this number has been unchanged. States like Colorado, who have implemented safe sex, sexual family planning into their curriculum, have actually shown drastic reduction in teen pregnancy rates. So that is exciting to see. And not surprisingly, many of our teen moms will be single moms. And that has repercussions down the line because many of these girls will not finish their education, whether it's high school or college. It affects their earning potential later down the line. And actually, many of the single moms live below the poverty level. So that just has many repercussions, you know, in future generations.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely a big problem. And it's pretty clear that we should really start the discussion on birth control in adolescence, middle school age, you know, definitely by high school, but definitely middle school age and adolescence. And you know, I don't want to really spend a ton of time here talking about condoms since we are pretty familiar with how that works. We're talking about the withdrawal method, which my friend from med school used to call the pull out and pray method. So I kind of wanted to spend some time talking more about the hormonal methods. First one, most obvious, the pill. So that's the most common method, correct?
Correct. So before we get to discussion on the pill, I just want to backtrack a little bit. When we start talking to our adolescents about birth control and safe sex, obviously it's not just the age, but it's also the maturity level of the child. But I just really want to emphasize the fact that, you know, talking about it doesn't mean your child or that adolescent is going to have sex. And I think that's the misconception out there, that if I start talking about it, they're going to start having sex. And that's not the case at all. So informing and giving them the information that they need, that if and when they do start having sex, they have the correct information.
Yeah, totally agree. I think that there's a misconception that speaking about it could encourage someone to do something earlier than their parents' ideal time for the child to be, or, you know, daughter to be participating in that.
Correct.
So the birth control pill, apparently only effective 91% of the time, which is something that is news to me. But as we were talking about this a little earlier, and that's because a lot of people that are using the birth control pill are not very good about taking it every day. So it actually has a 9% failure rate.
Correct. So the birth control pill is definitely the most common form of birth control used. If used perfectly, it is 99% effective, but we all know not everyone is perfect or maybe not be as consistent using it. But things like missing a pill, even if it's a day, things like interaction with other medications. And I feel like that's not always talked about when the pill is prescribed. And we're not just talking about other prescribed medications. There are some herbal remedies that can actually negatively affect the effectiveness of the pill. So in reality, when we kind of look at the data, it really shows that the pill is 91% effective in preventing pregnancy.
Right. But if you take it by the book and you have no other interacting medications and you take it at the same time every day, it should be, in theory, very close to 99% effective.
Correct.
Okay. That's good to know. I was like, yes. I haven't had a kid yet and I've been on it for a long time.
Correct.
So it's funny. We spent the first third of our lives trying not to have kids. And then the second third of our lives are really trying to have kids, which is can be frustrating as a female. So what is the depo shot? Am I even saying it right? Is it depo shot, depo shot?
Yeah, it's a depo. And basically, this is something that you get injected into your upper arm and it needs to be given every 3 months. So again, it's the same hormones as the pill, but again, you can forget about it, but you have to remember to go get it every 3 months. There can be other side effects, maybe not so much with our younger women, but in terms of bone density and things like that. And then, you know, if someone is not really a fan of needles, things like that, you can also have the usual kind of nausea, weight gain, headaches, pain, and bruising at the site. It is a good option. Many of our teenagers and younger women use it. But what I tend to see is that, you know, get busy and forget to go back and get it after the 3 months.
Yes, totally. Okay, so let's spend a little bit of time also talking about the patch, which I know is also a fairly common form of birth control. I actually did not know much about this when I was younger. I was a pill person. So can you tell us a little bit about the patch and how common it is and sort of how effective it is?
Yeah, so the patch, a lot of times it's called the transdermal patch, meaning that it goes on your skin and the hormones in the patch get absorbed through the skin. Again, like it wasn't really, it was just starting to come out when I was kind of in my reproductive years. You know, basically you have to stick a new patch every month to clean dry skin, you know, whether it's on your belly, your arm, your butt cheeks or your back, definitely not your breast. And again, it's kind of the same thing. You know, if it's used perfectly, you don't forget about it, can be close to 99% effective. But again, with the other factors, meaning like if you forget to replace the patch on time, the patch may fall off a lot of times. One of the side effects is that it causes a lot of irritation. So kind of moving the patch around even during that month that you have it on, or if it falls off, that means you're not getting those hormones. And again, certain medications, including herbal stuff, can reduce its effectiveness.
And how often are you supposed to change that?
Once a month.
And does it fall off? Like, it's got to be really sticky for it to stay on.
It's got to be really sticky, yeah. But, you know, that is one of the kind of precautions they talk about. I know when it first came out, this was modified. It was causing a lot of irritation. So a lot of women would stop using it or take it off one part of the body and put it somewhere else because there was a lot of irritation. Because, you know, if people have an allergy to a certain component or just sensitive skin, you know, it is still an adhesive.
Okay. And why not on your breast? Like, I'm just joking around here, but like, does it make your boobs bigger or something? Or
No, it doesn't make your boobs bigger, but I think it's, I'm assuming it's because of the hormones directly in the breast. And if there's any, you know, it can affect the tissues of the breast and things like that. So they say to avoid that area.
Right. And I imagine actually if it's hormonal and related, it could actually even be dangerous.
Correct.
But we'll have to ask a breast surgeon about that. That's for another episode.
Right.
Okay. So Natasha, before we move on to IUDs, can you tell us a little bit about the vaginal ring?
Sure. Yeah. The birth control ring, the trade name is called NuvaRing. It's pretty safe. It's simple and it's an easy birth control method. The woman gets a prescription from her doctor. One box usually contains three rings, so you can get multiple boxes prescribed to you at one time. And basically, the woman inserts it into her vagina where the hormones are released directly into her vaginal lining. And it's pretty effective, but again, you have to replace the ring every month. You have to insert it correctly. If it does fall out, which can happen, can also reduce the effectiveness. And since it is hormonal, medications that we previously talked about can reduce its effectiveness. But overall, it is a good choice.
Yeah, because I guess you don't really have to remember then about taking the pill every day. And it's something that you can at least do on your own and not really dependent on the physician doing it for you.
Correct.
So another type of contraception that I do want to talk about that I have very little knowledge on is the long-acting reversible contraception, such as an IUD and an implant. And I know that you said that this is often abbreviated as LARC.
LARC. So LARC, long-acting reversible contraception. So we call them the LARCs. And basically that encompasses the IUD, which, you know, is the intrauterine device, and the implants, which go underneath your skin. So collectively, they're called LARCs. And these methods are actually the most effective for preventing pregnancy, obviously outside of male or female sterilization.
Okay. And so the IUD is placed by a physician usually?
Usually a physician. I have learned in some markets, you know, I guess if there's a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant, like an allied health professional, they can place it and remove it as well.
Is it something that could ever travel backwards?
I guess there's a small risk of it. So they do check placement and things like that. And you know, I guess there is the option to always go back and if there's, you know, discomfort. But yes, there have been incidences where it's not placed correctly.
Yeah.
And it can, you know, whether fall out and things like that. But generally speaking, it is the most effective method of birth control. And in my opinion, it's a great method because you don't really have to think about it. And the key word is reversible. So it can be as long-term as you want it, but just say, you know, your plan was to not have children for 5 years, but you decided, hey, I want to start trying, and it's only been 3 years, these can be removed and it restores your fertility back to its baseline.
And do you know how long that takes around?
Usually there shouldn't be any delay. So probably within the next cycle, you can start trying.
Okay. Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. So these are wonderful, especially for probably for most women, because we're busy and trying to remember when to take a pill or when to get the patch replaced, things like that. But definitely this is what I talk to my teenagers about for those who are sexually active, because definitely a teenager is not going to remember taking a pill every day or using a condom correctly and every single time. So unfortunately, we're not seeing the use of LARCs in our teenagers and our young women that we would like to.
I think probably one of the reasons, you know, feel free to obviously weigh in and correct me if you disagree, would probably be that they have to really go in to get it done. And I would think that it's so much easier to use a condom just because of discretion. And I'm not sure if that's still something that people are really concerned with.
Right, exactly. And I think the planning that goes into the process of having to make the appointment, but also, you know, it is not surgery, but it is a minor procedure. And I think there are still some, many can be reticent about, oh my gosh, I don't want anything, you know, quote unquote, stuck in my arm or quote unquote, stuck inside of me.
Right. Yeah, it can be a little scary, I think, for a lot of people to get over that. But it's good to know that they're very effective, they're very safe, especially when placed appropriately. And I just want to double back on one thing that we're going to talk about, but then didn't talk about, was that in general, oral contraceptives are not recommended for smokers. But there is something called a mini pill. And so could you just tell us what the difference is between the mini pill and OCPs?
Sure. Yeah. So the pill that most people are familiar with have two hormones, estrogen and progesterone. The mini pill only has progesterone. Mostly what I'm familiar with is obviously suitable for women who are unable to take estrogen for whatever reason. But the mini pill is commonly prescribed for women who are postpartum and breastfeeding because estrogen can affect breast milk production. So you'll commonly see a postpartum mom maybe taking the mini pill. But again, it's the same thing. Missing the pill, you know, interaction with medication can also reduce its effectiveness. The issue with oral contraceptives, and I'm hoping women are getting educated on this when they are getting their initial prescription, oral contraception in women who are smokers increases the risk of blood clots. And that can be very dangerous because usually it starts in the lower legs, but it can travel up into the heart. So because the mini pill lacks estrogen, can be taken by smokers. And for women who may have different health conditions who are unable to take estrogen, the mini pill is a good option for them.
Okay. And so, but that's with all sort of hormonal birth control, right? They all have both estrogen and progestin except for the mini pill?
Yes. Generally speaking, yes.
So even the IUDs, the implants, the LARCs, the patch, the only thing that just has progesterone is the mini pill that's sort of readily available for use.
Well, most of the hormonal IUDs releases only progestin, and they go by the brand names like Marina, Kylena, Skyla, things like that. So that has progestin in it.
How often do those have to be replaced?
So depending on the type of IUD, hormonal IUDs can be from anywhere from 3 to 10 years. The non-hormonal IUDs, the trade name is something called Paragard. The non-hormonal IUDs are made out of copper to prevent pregnancy. They can actually last up to 12 years.
Oh, wow. So it's made out of copper. Interesting.
Made out of copper. Yes. So basically the copper is the mechanism that it prevents pregnancy because sperm doesn't like copper. So no sperm, no baby.
Yeah, definitely.
So I was actually surprised. I know in my training, I always thought IUDs were up to 10 years. So I didn't realize the Paragard could be for 12 years.
I'm going to have to say I'm definitely in the camp of people that are scared to have something up there for a long time. So I hear the statistics and I hear you. Now with my iPhone, I just like put my reminders in and I can take my medication on time. Definitely 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, much, much harder. I think now we have so many devices that can sort of prompt us and remind us to take our pills. But yes, it's great to know that there's tons of options available for each woman out there in whatever age range. And before we talk about emergency contraception, the last thing that I just want you to sort of briefly touch on is the implantable rod.
Right. Okay. So the implantable rod is implanted in the arm, just like the name says. Brand names include Nexplanon and Implanon. These last up to 10 years. And basically, again, it's a minor procedure in the office. You insert it and you just forget about it. It's just basically like a thin, it looks like a matchstick. And it's basically 99% effective. And again, it lasts for up to 5 years, but you can get it removed before then and resume your baseline fertility.
Wow, that's interesting. Do you have to like declare that when you go through TSA or anything?
No. Back in the day when it started, I remember years ago, one of my classmates had it placed in, but it was, I guess, still new then. And I don't know if it's just because she was so thin or if just, you know, it was a new procedure. You could actually like feel it under the arm. So I don't think that's the case anymore. So that was a little interesting to see it there.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about everyone's favorite emergency contraception or plan B for some people, which is plan A. So plan B is effective in preventing pregnancies about 7 of 8 times, and you don't need a prescription for it, which is nice because it's over the counter. What I did not know, which I know you're going to tell us more about, is that it is less effective in women who are over 165 pounds. And can we just talk about that? Because I think that's surprising for a lot of people.
Yeah. So we were talking before, I didn't realize the weight restriction until I started doing research for this podcast. But, you know, the morning after pill plan B, taking it within 72 hours after unprotected sex was a great option. And like you said, not having to get a prescription is vital for many women. But basically, the folks who have done research on this have shown that women who are 165 pounds can be reduced effectiveness of Plan B. And I don't know if that's being told to women when they go into the pharmacy. I don't know if it's part of the package insert. And actually, one of the experts in Europe have done studies, and she shows that basically women who are 175 pounds or higher can actually lose complete effectiveness. The issue that is concerning to me is that a woman who's 175 pounds and who can be very tall is not necessarily obese. So in those terms, it's difficult to say when you're considering weight and the BMI issue. But I think the message is that if you're in that range of weight, that's something to consider, and maybe Plan B is not the best choice for you.
So if Plan B is not the right choice, or if you're someone who's listening who's concerned that maybe the weight restriction could be an issue for preventing your pregnancy, what are some other options they can choose as emergency contraception after unprotected sex?
So another pill, the brand name is called Ella. And again, it is a pill, and you have to take it within 5 days after unprotected sex. So you have a little bit more of a time frame. But the issue with the Ella pill is that you need a prescription from a nurse or a doctor. Hopefully, if you call your doctor's office or Planned Parenthood, you can get in quickly to get the prescription for the Ella medication.
Ella sounds like a great option, especially because it also seems effective longer than, but can take effect up to 5 days after unprotected sex versus 3, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So you have that longer time period. And another option, which may not work for everyone, again, you need an appointment, but generally speaking, if you're going to call your doctor's office or Planned Parenthood and tell them you need an appointment for emergency contraception, you're most likely going to get in, if not that day, within the next 1 or 2 days. And the other option is what we already talked about, is the IUD, but it's the copper IUD, which is the non-hormonal IUD. So again, if you get that placed within 5 days after having unprotected sex, it's actually very effective, but it's also kind of beneficial because if you go in and use that as an emergency contraception method, that can stay in as your birth control method. So I thought that was pretty interesting because, you know, we think of IUDs as something to prevent pregnancy kind of as a long-term option, which it is, but the Paragard can kind of work both ways as an emergency contraceptive method as well.
Right.
And again, that's also like the Ella pill, you have 5 days, you know, about 120 hours to get that placed after having unprotected sex.
Right. And so the one thing that is interesting is that even though Ella requires a prescription, now with the advent of telemedicine, this is something that you may even be able to do from the comfort of your home if you can get evaluated via telemedicine. I think that's also kind of newer for us now in 2019 than when, you know, me and you were sort of earlier reproductive years per se.
Yeah, correct. Because Ella, you can, you know, obviously get it through an online method and things like that. So yeah, that's a great option.
So one other thing that I just want to ask, because this is something that I have been curious about and I've never done. So can you just use emergency contraception? Like if you're someone who maybe isn't very sexually active, can you just use Plan B a couple times a month and not be on birth control? I mean, I'm not advocating for it, but is there any downside to that aside from not being on regular contraception? Tell me your medical opinion.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, you don't want to use emergency contraception for so many reasons as your regular contraception. Because again, if you're sexually active, kind of having that plan and being prepared is always important. But it's not always, you know, obviously, emergency contraception is not going to be as effective as having regular birth control methods and things like that. And it may not consistently prevent pregnancy as well as other consistent forms of birth control. And again, you know, taking the morning pill as a form of birth control, you know, can be very expensive, obviously. And while there are not any major side effects, but things like, you know, bleeding between periods and having nausea can get annoying. So, you know, I recommend that if you have to use Plan B a couple times, that should be the exception, not the rule.
Wow, that was a ton of useful information. Thank you, Dr. Natasha Sriraman, for being here and taking the time to be with us and teaching us all about different birth control options.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to learning more about the project.
So you can check her out on Instagram, which her handle is natasha.mom.md. Thanks for listening to us here at the FemHealth Podcast. And be sure to check out our website, which is femhealthproject.com. The book is launching soon, so you definitely don't want to miss that. It's all about knowing your body, knowing your mind, and knowing your options. See you next time.